Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of the game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Today, honey, we got the pleasure of talking to the hardest woman in America. Hello, y'all. That is Miss Natasha Telford, who is going to be sharing with us her mini hats and what's going on with her story of life, balance, and business, and being a solopreneur in this world of entrepreneurship. Welcome, Miss Natasha.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrice. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited so you can share this story. So give us, what's your story?
So my story, and I guess the start, is that I do wear a lot of hats. Currently, I am a retired cosmetologist. A lot of people never have the opportunity to retire from the field, but I was blessed to retire from the field and transition into corporate America, which I am now preparing to retire again. So I kind of use the tagline, my life has been so nice, sit back and watch me retire twice.
All right, I can go with that. Hello, listen, my life has been so nice, watch me retire twice. I want to be able to do that too. I've had an opportunity to go ahead and tell the school board of Miami-Dade and Broward County both, thank you, but I'm moving on. So that's been the first part. So I'm getting ready for my twice too, hello.
All right, hey.
So I'm all excited about that. In your life, has there been a trauma that really has been something that stuck with you?
Yes. So my trauma, my mother was very strict. Okay. We would use the term in St. Petersburg, Florida, she does not play the radio. I was not allowed to go to the mall with my friends, have sleepovers at my friend's house, have sleepovers at my house. And my mother worked in the nursing field. So of course I thought it was all about keeping me away from the boys. So I ended up dating this guy, and he would come over when my mom was away from work, and I would sneak over to his house. So at the ripe age of 15, I ended up pregnant.
Ooh.
And I was going back and forth, struggling being 15 and being pregnant and not wanting the baby. And of course, my mother, when she found out, she was like, no, you need to keep the baby. So going back and forth with keeping the baby or not keeping the baby, I finally decided, okay, I'm going to keep the baby. So when he gave me the money to go and have an abortion, my mother in turn took the money and took me shopping for maternity clothes. Whoa. Unfortunately, I ended up losing that child at 28 weeks.
Wow.
And that took me through a downward spiral. And that's really when I first started dealing with depression. And it kind of took me where I ended up being a high school dropout because I just didn't want to go to school. At the time, I was going to a dropout prevention school for teen parents. So after I lost the baby, her name was Shanice Louise Bell, because I actually had to have natural childbirth and push her out. So I was able to hold my child even though she was deceased. Being at that school, they allowed me to come back, but to hear all these other babies crying and my child is not there, I just cried and cried. I finished out that school year, but after that, I just really wasn't feeling school at all. So I became a high school dropout and I said, I'm just going to work a job and I'll be fine. Like, what is school going to do for me anyway? But then I found myself pregnant again at the age of 16.
So I want to go back for a second. You talked about falling into this depression. And I know for so many women, you know, we pride ourselves on being this superwoman. And here you were, yes, at 15, thrown into the thrust of being this woman so early. And then having to experience such a grown thing of losing a child. And I don't know about anybody else. I have not had that happen to me, but I know it's a very devastating thing. I've watched my mother lose my brother at a very, very young age. Literally, he died the next day after he was born.
Oh.
So for her, I know what it looked like for her in that level of depression and coming out of it and understanding. What was that for you?
For me, it was really, I didn't want to be bothered. You know, people want to console you. And, you know, my mother and I didn't want her hugs. I didn't want her talking to me. I just don't want to be bothered with anybody. I just want to sit in my room, cry and sleep. And that was basically all I did. I really didn't eat. I didn't want to go outside. And that lasted for a moment. And I think once I came out of that depression, it's a very dark space, but if anybody goes through it and you can dig yourself out, then I applaud you because it's a hard place to dig out of. However, when I dug myself out of it, I now was this thuggette, as I call myself, where I was kind of living the street life. I'm a high school dropout. I'm dating a big time dope boy. So it's like, what do I need school for? I'm just going to work and do me. And that was kind of my escape from what I went through.
I'm going to go back for a second. Okay, you use a term. Okay, you use a day kind of term. I'm going to go in there for a second. How did you dig yourself out? Because I know for me, I am a therapist. I see on this side and I give people techniques every day, but I always tell them, listen, I may give you techniques and they may not work for you. What did you use to dig yourself out? Because I love to hear what people did. What did it look like for you in that process of digging out?
Yeah, to dig yourself out, you have to find the light. You know, people can try to lead you to the light, but you have to find out what is that light for you? What is that one thing for you that is going to make you want to keep going forward? That's going to make you not try to commit suicide? Because when you're in a deep state of depression, you just want to die. You don't want to live. Hmm. So for me, it was like, you know what? I'm going to just get out here and make this money and ball out and, you know, do designer clothes and be all that I can be. Because what I went through, I just didn't feel like there was anything else to live for. And then I realized, hey, you've never did this part of life. And growing up, I watched all of the Black cinema. So, you know, my Shiro was Foxy Brown.
Hello, you better talk about that.
It was now. Like, hey, you know, I never lived that Foxy Brown life. So I kind of in my head took on that persona of being this bad bitch, so to speak, where mm-hmm. I can overcome anything. And that's what I used to help dig myself out of that hole that I was in. Because if I would have just kept thinking about losing my daughter and thinking about, oh, you know, I would see other teen parents with their kids. I was like, oh, well, she would be like this if she was 3 months. And, you know, just thinking through those things, it just kind of takes you deeper into it. So you kind of have to block it out. So what I did is I kind of blocked it out of my mind. And I recall before I went through that block, I remember praying to God. And I said, if I could just hear her voice, I would feel better. And I remember laying in my bed and I heard just as loud as day, this baby cry. And to this day, nobody can tell me that was my daughter that God was allowing me to hear and know that, hey, Shanice is okay. Go ahead and live your life. So that's how I dug myself out.
Wow. What an amazing story. Wow. Let's go a little deeper. After this, you came in your words. Let me make sure I put that out there. In your words. You became a thug, honey.
Okay. I was a thughead, yes.
Don't thug now. Hold on now. So in this thugging lifestyle, what was that for you? I know so many people always talk about it from the guy's point of view. And, you know, I've known quite a few BDs myself in my life.
Uh-huh.
But what does that look like? Because so many people now glamorize these lifestyles. But what was it really for you?
So for me, at one point I was the handler, so to speak. Okay, how you guys look at the guys, I was that chick. So I was selling the product. And then I had this light bulb moment. I said, hey, I don't have to go out there and risk myself. I can just date the guy that does it. So at some moments in my life, I would buy the product, but I would give it to my dude to sell and he would give me back all of my profit. So I didn't even have to go out there and be at risk at all whatsoever. Sometimes I wouldn't be that far away. I used to spend the night in a dope house and, you know, watch the product be sold. I used to be the driver to go pick the product up. You know, sometimes we would go pick the product up, do a pit stop at the mall, kind of figure out what we wanted to go and buy that weekend. We did our window shopping thing.
Yes.
Sell the product that weekend, you go to the mall, go to the club, ball out and have fun. So I've been on both sides where I would just sit back and just let someone take care of me. I used to actually sell the product myself. And then I used to buy the product and give it to someone else to sell and have them give me my profit back. So I've done all aspects of it.
So except now you done took the job legit. So now our thugette days are over.
Yes.
What did we walk into? Because I mean, I know for me, I dated a couple of DDs in my life. That's exactly what I call them. I dated my share. I think that's kind of every girl's story at some space.
Either right.
You knew somebody or you knew somebody or you were that somebody.
Right.
So after you get that moment and say, you know what? This ain't it. This ain't the life I want to live. we don't want to do this. What did you move into? How did that transition move?
So that transition that led me to being a reformed thuggette, which is what I call myself now, it was kind of ironic how it happened, but I do believe nothing just happened. So I feel this was God's hand on this. One day I was, because I had my own place that me and my boyfriend stayed at, but we had what was called a hole that everything was sold out of. So we were actually staying the night at the hole this particular night. I didn't know we were going to get robbed. So I recall being in the bed, laying down, and the door was open so I could see the front door. I recall my son, who was 3 at the time, he was sleeping on the couch. And then I recall seeing the door open, but it was my brother-in-law. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I went back to sleep. The house had a Jack and Jill bathroom, which is pretty much a bathroom that's shared between 2 bedrooms. So the bathroom is in the middle. Next thing I know, I hear our door open that goes into the bathroom. So when I open my eyes up and look over, there is a man there with a gun to my brother-in-law's head. And I'm not talking about a regular gun. This is a huge gun with a clip holding that's round, that's about that big. So that's a lot of bullets that's in there.
Yeah.
And he's holding this gun to his head, and I'm trying to nudge my boyfriend to wake up because I'm like, oh shit. Like, you see this part on the movies, but you never think you're going to really go through that part. Mm-hmm. So when he gets up, and he was smart. He was a really smart man. He always kept a dummy stash in case this ever happened. So the dude was like, you know what time it is? And he said, okay. So he tried to give the guy this Pringle can he had stuffed with money. And I remember the guy looked at the Pringle can and he said, nah, dog, it's more than this for the rest of the day. And me being me, I'm talking cash shit, okay? I'm like trying to get to my son because that's my only thought. Is my son okay? So at some point, I didn't read the room and I didn't understand, but my boyfriend at the time did. This man was about to shoot me. And I recall he stood in front of me. He said, take all the money, take whatever you want, but please don't shoot my lady. He stood in front of me so this guy would not shoot me. So I recall these men leaving and I wanted to try to leave and to go to my house where I knew I would be safe. And he was like, no, you can't leave right now because they're going to think you're following them. But as they left and came around the side of the house, they shot into this house. And had we not moved from where we were standing, where they had us standing at, those bullets would have hit us. Wow. So for me, that was my wake up moment of, okay, this is not the life that I want, because now I'm not this just me. It's like, hey, it's me and this 3-year-old little boy that I have to be sure that he's safe. So that was my wake up moment to get out of this lifestyle. So from there, I was already working in the cosmetology world. So I kind of went full fledged into it. Working in cosmetology. At that time, I was still doing booth rental at a salon in Tampa. And I became a platform artist. So I started traveling with the company and working at different hair shows, educating other cosmetologists, just traveling throughout the US. And I really enjoyed that moment. And before I retired from that industry, I worked in the industry for like over 20 years. I ended up owning 2 hair salons. And I think I did pretty good for myself because the money I made at the salon took care of the salon and gave me some extra cushion. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't realize that, hey, you can be a solopreneur all you want, but there's some benefits that corporate America provides that it's kind of hard for you to get your hands on just because of the cost. So I had ended up going back into corporate America just for the benefit portion, to have benefits for me and my son.
So wait a minute. So here you go. You done had this life, former thuggette life. We done not moved on over. We've owned these salons, doing the big wheel on the style. We're doing well, have 2 salons. Now you've retired and said, okay, you know what? I realized in this, I still don't have what I need as a solo entrepreneur.
Yes.
And you go back into corporate America.
Yes.
What is that like? Because I'm like, I know for me, I can't wait to be like, take this and la 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 la. I can't wait to be like, and hear y'all badge too. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
So right.
What is that like to go back in?
It was a little bit of shell shock because when you come from working for yourself and you can do what you want to do, take your vacation when you want to go on vacation, you know, kind of make your own schedule. Now, all of a sudden, you have someone else telling you when you need to be to work, when you can go on vacation. You can't sit up there and drop F-bombs in the office like you could in the salon. You know, you can't be hooting and hollering like you was at the salon. You can't say, okay, at 3 o'clock, we're going to have some cocktails up in here. Like, you can't do those same things that you did in the salon. So it was a real transition for me. Mm-hmm. But I believe in corporate America. And the first place that I'm speaking of is when I worked at Paychex. That's where I learned all of my payroll foundation. I stayed there for about 5 years, but that's what I learned corporate politics. And people don't realize there's politics in corporate America.
Let's talk about this corporate politics.
It's not spelled P-O-L-I-T-I-C. It's P-O-L-I-T-I-K. So it's basically that world of it's not what you know, it's who you know. And I would move a certain way, but I was kind of raised in because I'm originally from Ohio. So up there, it was pretty much you go to work, you do your job, you go home. You don't try to be friendly. It was kind of like you make, you know, family time, friend time outside of work, but work is work. So I had that mentality because that's where I was originally from. And that's kind of what I see my aunts, uncles, and my mom do. So I was kind of like tunnel vision at work, just doing my work. And then I would start seeing people saying, hey, we're going here after work. We're doing this. And I used to say, well, why am I not getting invited to all these things? I'm a pretty cool ass person. You know what I mean? I'm cool. And I didn't understand that. So one day I asked this guy and I said, what do people say about me? And his reply shocked me because he said, well, you just misunderstood. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? And he never really explained it. But later on, I caught it. I was like, oh, I'm not personable at work. At some point, I got the feedback that people felt I was not approachable because
you seem very angry. I'm like, me?
Right. Like, what?
Because everybody who knows me know I'm always cracking jokes. I'm like,
exactly.
You shouldn't be talking about the same chocolate chick right here because I don't think I'm aggressive. I don't think I'm unapproachable. I just think you need to color me in a certain way.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's when I learned that being, I'm a very transparent person and I like to be, you know, straightforward. I don't want you to have to read through the lines and try to figure out what I meant or what I said. So that's when I learned I had to kind of change my vernacular a little bit to be more corporate, so to speak. So that transition was hard. It was a hard transition. But I made my way through it. But that when you first make that transition to getting into corporate, whether you're coming out of college or whatever it is, it's the entire culture that you have to learn. And every company you go to, the culture is going to be a little bit different. Yes, so you have to continuously adjust. It's always, every time you start a new job, it's like the first day of school all over again.
So you've done this corporate thing. I'm going to ask the question, it's going to sound really crazy. What were some of the harvests? That means what were some of your things that were like, wow, I went into this, but I got this out of it. What did you get out of the corporate thing for you besides the insurance package?
So what I actually ended up getting was understanding a totally different way of learning and living life. I learned how to communicate with people a little better, not to be so hard and harsh and rough around the edges. Because, you know, when you're a thuggette, you got to say what you mean and mean what you say.
Hello.
But in corporate America, you have to say what you mean and mean what you say. So the tone has to be different.
There's but you're doing the same thing. There's a different way you're saying.
Exactly. So I had to, and the way I realized it was really my tone that was throwing everybody off. Because I'm this cool person. I love cracking jokes just like you. Mm-hmm. I love making people laugh. But I was actually playing a joke on my kids one day. And this was probably a couple weeks after I got this feedback that I was not approachable. And I'm like, what? And I decided to record it. And I realized my kids wasn't laughing. And I'm like, well, what? And I'm like, it was a joke. And they was like, no, Ma, that wasn't a joke. And I played it back and I heard my tone and I said, oh, that's what it is. So sometimes you have to do this self-reflection in order to improve yourself. So I feel corporate America has helped me to improve myself in many, many areas over and over and over again. And even now I feel like I'm so much better, but I still know I can be so much better. So I'm still working towards that.
So let's talk about this. The corporate world, you move from that, and then you go back into being that solopreneur. What were those beginning days like? Because I know everybody talks about the glitz and glams of being your own boss, and I'm a solopreneur, and I'm a, what is it, girl boss, woman boss, bad bitch, all that stuff. And we get here, and it's like, it looked great when you coming from a distance. It looks great. But what is it like in those first couple of days? Because,
yeah. It's kind of like OMG type of moment.
Yeah.
Because now you have this corporate foundation and you're coming back into solopreneurship and you're saying to yourself, I want to do it differently this time. And when I came back into it, I'm coming into a totally different field. I'm not coming back as a cosmetologist. Now I'm coming back where I am taking my business knowledge, my collegiate education, and I'm helping other business owners that didn't necessarily go to school and they kind of just jumped into it because they saw the glitz and glam of it, but they don't understand the foundation. They don't understand the seed money part. They don't understand the hard times. They don't understand ignore the profit because, you know, you're going to have to dig into that at some moment in order to, you know, elevate or scale your business. So it was really sitting down and saying, okay, now that you're ready to do this, what is your business plan? What do you really want to do? What's the audience you want to serve? You want to identify, okay, what is your ideal client? Because everybody can't be your client. I learned that in the cosmetology industry. Everybody that sits in my chair is not meant to be my client. I've actually had some people I knew the moment they sat down, this is not going to work. And you have that same feeling when you're going into a different area. So depending on what your business is, you even have people in retail business. Like I've seen some people that own the beauty supply stores, the Black owned beauty supply stores. And I remember one lady saying she has this lady that comes in all the time and she just asks all these questions, but she never purchases anything. And she was so annoyed by that. But when you have someone coming into a retail store, you really just want them to purchase. Yeah. But when you have a service-based business, you have to be more careful who you take on as a client, because sometimes that client can cost you more than what you're actually making. So what I mean by that is when you look at the opportunity cost of things, which means there's no money attached, sometimes the opportunity cost is too high, which means that client is not for you. And you have to be able to politely let them know, I don't think we're a good fit. So that's kind of how that looked with me trying to identify who's my ideal client. And I know initially most of the clients that I was targeting and trying to market to, they were women. And I kept realizing it was just like this block. Like it just, I never got that free flow that I always look for. Now in the cosmetology industry, yes. But coming back as a service-based business, trying to help people build their business, doing their bookkeeping, doing their payroll and things like that, I realized that I got a better response from men business owners than I did from women business owners. The women business owners that I got a good response from, those were the ones that were serious about their business. Now, the ones that were in it for the glitz and glam, they didn't want to hear the truth that I was trying to give them. So we just never got that free flow, because when I'm giving them truth, they're looking at this falsified picture and looking at me like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. So, you know, I took it with a grain of salt and I just realized, okay, this is not going to be a fit.
So in this process, I got to tell you what drew me to you. It was the Get Your Life coaching.
Yes, Get Your Life Together.
Get Your Life Together. And the first thing I thought about when I read that was my mother. I'm going to be very honest with you. When she get into her mom, go get your life together. And I'm like, do she know me? Like, yeah, mom may have a conversation. Like, and it's so funny because I even say that now to my own clientele at the job. When people pay me, I'd be like, go get your life together. We're not having this conversation today. Yes. And I said, you know what? I love that, because the way you say it is so relatable. It's something that you literally do hear family members say, friends say. And it doesn't come off mean, but it just come off as, get it together, man. I love you, but you got to get this together.
Exactly.
Talk to me about this particular venture.
Okay, so this Get Your Life, I consider myself the head life correction coach at Get Your Life Together, Inc. And head this is basically,
I want to make sure I'm saying it right. Head correction life coach.
Yes, head right. life correction coach. And this is really about helping people do their shadow work, understand what their blocks are in their life or in their business so they can get past that. So if you kind of look behind me, like I said, this is my TikTok room that I'm getting together. But this kind of represents things in my life, like Scarface. I love Scarface, the movie, and Thug at Life, that's attached to. But when I started doing my shadow work, I realized that I had a wounded inner child. So this is where this bed set comes from, because I know I needed to heal my inner child. But some people, they want you to kind of give them everything they want to hear that's positive, but they don't want to hear the negativity. And you have to be able to point out to them things that's going on in their life that are negative that they need to correct, because those things are the hindrances that are preventing them from moving forward. So I've had friends, and one particular friend, really, really good friend, and she always called with complaints. I mean, whether it was her boyfriend, her job, her family. And I finally said, okay, let me call you back, because I realized I had to stop engaging in her conversation.
Hello, so now.
I would just start saying, let me call you back. Let me call you back. Because she wasn't taking heed to the, you know, I'm trying to guide her away from it. So one day she said, well, I realize every time I talk to you, you're saying you'll call me back, but you never do. I said, well, friend, you know what? I'm just trying to be a real positive person, and you just so negative. Like, everything you talk about is negative. And she was so upset about that, and she didn't understand it. But I was kind of like, yeah, you are. So I'm gonna give you an example of what I mean. So in her dating world, one day she called me about this guy that she met, and she's dating him, and he's like retired military, this and that. He's driving this, I think it was like a 2019 car. This is like in 2019 that we're talking about. I think she said it was a Cadillac. So she said he came to her and said, I'm gonna turn my car in because I feel like I could be doing more things with this money. So she comes to me and says, I don't think he handled his money right, because why would you have that car and you're going to turn the car in? That just doesn't make sense. And I looked there and I said, well, to me, it sounds like he's being a grown man and an adult about the situation. If he's looked at his money and realized, hey, and let's just say the car payment was $600. I could be doing a lot of other things with this $600 car payment, not even calculating in car insurance. So if we added car insurance, he might have been paying $1,000 a month. He possibly said, you know what? I want to travel more. I want to be able to do more for my grandkids. And he said, I really don't need this car. I have it for show and I don't need it. There's other things I can do with it. So she's complaining and complaining about this man. So that's when Tot, capital T-O-T, that's me, that I'm Coach Tot, stepped into the conversation. I said, well, it sounds like he was being an adult about it, because if he feels like he's paying too much, he didn't say he couldn't afford it. He said he felt he was paying too much and could be doing other things. I don't see anything wrong with that. But how can you judge this man when you yourself don't have your life together? Your money is not together. Every time you turn around, you robbing Peter to pay Paul. You're doing payday loans and you borrowing money from people. But you're mad because this man is saying he's going to give a car back because he's paying too much money for it. So those type of conversations, people are not ready for. But as a life coach, those are the conversations that you have to have. So that's my life coaching role, is to point out the things to you that some people that might be your friend, but they're not comfortable enough to give you the truth that you need to hear, because that's what's going to set you free.
All right. Well, y'all listen, make sure you check out Coach Tot, because Coach Tot sound like she don't play no games, okay? She the one to fool with. Yes. What I love about it is that as you talk about it, it's very much truth. You know, we love people where they are, and you meet them where they are.
Exactly.
And just kind of piggybacking off your story, it makes me think about people when they talk about dating. So you see this person and they're trying to get their financial story together, but your story is falling apart. You can't understand what they're doing.
Exactly.
And that makes you say, you know what? I got to work on some things in my financial story. I can't say to somebody, oh, I want a billionaire and I want this and that, but I'm not doing what I need to do with my money so I can become the billionaire, so exactly. that I can be in the lead to meet the billionaire.
Exactly. So
I think that's amazing that you're doing that part. Listen, I'm telling you, you gave me so much good stuff. You're the family, like the fat girl that I am. And we know that is fabulously thick on this channel. Okay. All right. Don't forget it. So I want to thank you for coming on, sharing with us. Tell us how they can connect with you.
You can connect with me, Tot Styles, capital T-O-T, because I'm already short. It's capital T-O-T-S-T-Y-L-E-S on all social media platforms. I also have Get Your Life Together, which life is spelled L-Y-F-E. On Facebook, that is my motivational, inspirational page that you can just join that page. You can also reach me via email at natasha@sharshankinpayroll.com because I have the payroll and the business company, which is part of Natasha Telfair, Inc.
All right. Well, I told y'all this one was the hardest working woman I did, okay? I ain't mad either. All right, y'all. Well, I thank y'all for tuning on in to the Patrice Brantley Show. We're on this show, Helping Others is the Name of the Game, and we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth.
Amen.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.